Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and of course, trick arrows. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by my compatriots. John Maltz is here. Hi, John.
Four words, Dan. Behind the back shot.
And Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
He hits her with a hockey stick, which is the most Canadian thing that I've seen in a Marvel movie. It doesn't work.
No.
And
no.
I love how confused he looks. Like, yeah, right, that should have really hurt.
That should have hurt a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. We are here to cover both this week's episode of Hawkeye, which is episode 3, entitled Echoes, for reasons that will quickly become apparent. And first, however, we will be covering the most recent episode of Legends of Tomorrow, which aired last week, season 7, episode 7, entitled A Woman's Place is in the War Effort. So Guy English is going to do a quick recap of Legends. We'll discuss that, and then we'll move on to Hawkeye. And if we have a little time, we'll discuss a couple superhero sweep developments. But Guy, why don't you take us away?
All right. So the gang lags in yet another forest, and they hightail it to a latrine slash John's house. Bishop does a bit of exposition, so we're all on the same page about where things are at. The time machine is bust, so the gang needs to set out to figure out how to repair it. Sarah and Ava stumble upon a World War II-era aircraft manufacturing plant, and it is just the ticket. How convenient. It's like the writers... It's like the writers are watching Doctor Who, and you get put exactly where you need to get put for the sake of the story. Anyway, the factory floor is mostly women, but it is still misogynistic and racist as hell. This sets Astra off, and she ends up freezing the manager and secretly taking over the job. She approves a whole slew of progressive changes as the team manufactures the part they need to complete the time machine or repair the time machine. Eventually, Astra integrates the factory floor, which leads to white workers, both male and female, walking off the job. I don't know. Racists are kind of racist. It sucks. This upsets our friendly custodial manager, who cottons on to Astra's scam. Did we get her name?
I don't remember.
If we did, it glosses over real quick, and I meant to go back and note it, or at least look at the credits. But anyway... and they have an argument about how best to bring about lasting change. She takes a side of a sort of a slow and steady approach, while Astra advocates for an immediate change. We get a direct Malcolm X quote saying, "You don't stick a knife in a man's back inches." Let me get it right. "You don't stick a knife in a man's back 9 inches, then pull it out 6 inches and call that progress." Awesome quote. Like, that's it's yeah. You know. And the fact that they rolled with it in this show, I appreciate, especially because a couple of the early... I know we don't talk about the early seasons, but they used to go back in time and, like, ignore any of this. And, like, now they're dropping Malcolm X quotes. In a ham-fisted, very special episode, perhaps, but, like, good, you know? I dig it. So the Black... women and the remaining workforce work overtime to finish the plane on time, which sort of frustrated me, but it sort of underscores the you got to work twice as hard for twice as long to get half the, you know, so
yeah,
kind of gets that. Eventually, Eleanor Roosevelt drops by the factory for an inspection and commends workers for having done a great job. And then behind the scenes, she gets the president to integrate the factories 2 years ahead of what actually happened in the U.S. at the time. So this would be, what, like, I guess 41? Anyway, who cares? 2 years ahead of regular time. All hell breaks loose when an enemy wave rider appears and a commando squad attacks her gang. They make a run for the time machine, but Bishop ends up captured and shot off screen. After the jump, it turns out the commando squad is... the Legends. Zounds. So I think some of our... I actually wrote down Zounds, if you must know.
I believe it. That seems accurate.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. It goes back to a bit of a conspiracy corner where I thought at the beginning of the season that the Legends had blown up their own ship for some reason.
Right. This is I think a lot of that. Us had
this is clearly different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, in the B plot, which is quite sweet, Nate is going to move into the totem. So Bayrod takes it upon himself to teach him the Persian customs that will ingratiate him to their conservative uncle. They decide to treat Bishop as a guest and extend their most sort of gracious attitudes. This doesn't go well because Bishop is a dick. Finally, Bayrod snaps and calls him out. And he's surprisingly contrite and apologetic. It turns out he's been working on a super hat that'll let Gideon navigate the time and space continuum. So that sets him up as sort of being slightly redeemed. And then a little later, we see him shot in the head after saluting Sarah. So seems like an end to Bishop. We didn't see it on screen. On the other hand, the commandos do say we eliminated one. And we're not going to see a character shot in the head.
It's not that kind of legends.
It's not that
exactly.
Kind of show. So I take it. He's dead.
I would say so too.
Yeah. So that's the summary. What do you guys think?
There's a lot in this episode. So it was funny because I was texting with you guys and I was like, oh, you know, I've watched most of it. I've got 10 minutes left. Because I started watching it over the weekend.
What happens
in the last 10 minutes. Oh, wow, this is a much bigger episode than I thought. Because a lot of it, the first half an hour or so, was really just let's work on the factory floor. Let's deal with the, issues of racism and misogynism in the time.
Let's freeze the manager giving the closest to a Nazi salute that you can give. he's got one finger pointing out, but just what he was saying, oh God, you know.
Even that doesn't happen until halfway through the episode or something. It takes a while to sort of get it started because we're dealing with a lot of business. But I thought I enjoyed it. And then I got back for the last 10 minutes and was like, oh wow, this actually raises the stakes and does a whole bunch of development stuff. Which I thought was, and I loved the last 10 minutes of Bishop's evolution. I also really enjoyed. I mean, I thought, first of all, I have to say, I just out of curiosity, I was wondering about this, but I Googled and discovered, I believe the actor who plays Bishop, Rafi Barsoomian, I believe is married to Tala Ash.
Oh, really?
Right? Yeah.
Oh man, that is a good looking couple.
No kidding. If you haven't seen him, a picture of him without his beard and long hair, he is a very handsome man. he's not bad looking.
I have a beard and long hair. What are you saying?
I'm saying if you
what he said.
I heard. Yeah,
I can tidy myself up. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
But anyways, I enjoyed a lot of that. I really actually kind of enjoyed the subplot. With teaching Nate all the stuff, especially the bit at the end where Bayrod's like, you know, you can't drink in the toad.
That was the funniest line.
Yeah, it's the best punchline.
And we get a spit take, which is
always good. Yeah. Always good. Yeah. But yeah, I thought there was a lot of good stuff in there. I enjoyed kind of that last fight scene is fun. It feels menacing. And then even more so when you realize that the legends are the bad guys, it's also super creepy.
Yeah. Assuming they're robots. I mean,
I assume they're robots or clones. Yeah. Could be clones.
I suppose so. But I know he's into clones. It seems like robots are the thing this year. So I would guess that it's robots. Clones are still last season.
Clones are last season. That's true.
Yeah. 2 months ago.
They should have given them blockheads is what I think.
If only they had known.
Just very cuboid looking. Human beings. Yeah.
Also, it saves a lot of money on casting.
Right.
Yeah. 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 They definitely pulled a Star Trek on this one for sure.
I thought about that too. Yeah. What can we do so that we have not as fewer problems with, COVID restrictions and also don't spend a lot of money? Wait a minute.
Yeah. We're already good.
Yeah, but it works enough. I'm fine.
Sure. Oh no, I think it's great. I think it doesn't bother me at all.
It's a case where restrictions breed creativity, I find, right?
Yeah, I think so too.
You have this limitation of, well, we have all these issues that could be ironed out. Oh, wait, what if would this be interesting, right? If we do this where they have to essentially fight themselves, as we all thought they might have to, but instead it's just robot versions of themselves.
Yeah.
Right. And also they do the I don't know. I can't remember between this season and last season because there was a very short hiatus. That thing where they're all wearing basically stormtrooper costumes. So, you know, you never actually have to have them on the screen at the same time and do all of the you know, it gets complicated, like having two actors playing different roles on the screen at the same time is like, that sucks. That's a lot of work. They totally avoid that by putting them in little army men costumes.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, there's a lot going on there. I enjoyed pretty much the entire episode.
That was how to phrase what they do with the social issues in this show.
That's what I want to talk about.
Yes,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. And I don't want to give it short shrift.
Cutely ham-fisted or something. I don't know. I mean, it's not bad. I like it. It's handled, it's addressed, and it's handled in a TV show fashion.
It's a 40-minute TV show that is primarily a comedy, right? You gotta respect the bounds of sort of the thing you're trying to do, and you know, it's not Falcon and the Winter Soldier, but that had its own challenges when dealing with you know a lot of this stuff. So
it's more in line with a Facts of Life / Different Strokes kind of
like a sitcom-y
to things, mm-hmm. like a sitcom-y kind of take
on a very special episode
with an aw shucks. Yeah, let's go for it.
They didn't solve the gun problem, but
I was going to bring up the gun problem.
They're building guns, guys.
I like that they tried to tackle it. I really do.
Yeah.
I liked that they, you know, through an established character and the introduction of a new character, sort of took two different angles about, you know, what's possible and how progress is made. Mm-hmm, I like that ultimately we sort of like, we get to the conclusion that Astra is right to push as hard as she possibly can, even though there was sort of some resistance to that initially.
But it recognizes that it's dangerous.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And it also doesn't, you know, not left at the end thinking that they have solved racism.
No, in fact, that speech that she gives is like,
sped things up a little bit.
Right. That speech that she gives, like, who knows what's going to happen after the war? And I'm like, well, we know.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, not great. This is a comic book sketch of a very deep and horrible social problem.
Yeah.
That I think somehow they managed to pull off without being trite or demeaning. I don't know. I would have wanted more, but I have no idea how to do any more without totally changing the tone of the show and feeling it and feeling insincere and goofy about it.
And just like giving a short shrift, basically, right? Like, I mean,
right? Yeah,
you got to walk that
line.
You're
bound to give it short shrift. And I don't know. I think they did pretty well on this.
Yeah,
given the format and what they had to work with, and you know, so.
Yep.
Yeah. I agree.
And some funny lines still.
Yeah, some great funny lines. Yeah,
like I really enjoyed it. I'm not going to die in a factory.
Yeah, I like that too. Yeah, she was great. Tel Ash was great. We keep giving her, you know, kudos. But she's really great.
She's been one of the standout characters for me on the show over the last several seasons. I think. I mean, there are a lot of great characters. It's a great ensemble. They've definitely. You know, I think they've given her a lot to do, especially playing double roles, and that's a lot of fun. So, you know, and she's met the challenge with aplomb. So, I kudos to her, obviously.
I thought Astro was great this week. I appreciated the shout out to like let your natural hair down. I thought it was important.
She has great hair too. Come on, I mean,
I mean, she's a gorgeous woman. Yeah. She's just beautiful. Yeah. I thought, you know, good performances all around. The people that were not so pertinent were, well, like Nate. Let's take Nate. Goofy white guy. May as well be trying to throw a football to people all the time, you know? But they put him in a position of learning about Persian culture, which I also thought was kind of cool.
That was fun. I enjoy that they've spent a lot of time with Bayrod and Zari talking about their background and their culture. Because we had the whole episode... was it last year with Bayrod's favorite sitcom about the two Persian stoners? I just enjoy that, like, you know, we're just going to kind of dive into this. It's not a thing that probably most people, it's funny. I grew up with one of my very good friends growing up was Iranian. And so, like, it's funny to see that echo of it because I feel like it's something that, like, most people are not exposed to. It's not like a culture they have any familiarity with because it's right. so often portrayed in one fashion, you know. Yeah. Like there's only one side of that you see in American media usually.
There's the Back to the Future or what's that Schwarzenegger movie? Oh, God.
Well, Back to the Future, they're Libyans, so.
Right. Well, I know, but it's this, who cares? Let's just keep moving on. But there's a very there's a glossing over of a very deep culture that has roots going back a long time that just kind of gets like erased. In a lot of ways, and to see that sort of brought up, especially from Bayrod, who's kind of a stoner dude, is nice. I think it's cool. They do an interesting job with it. I'm not sure if they do it total justice, but I don't think they do anything total justice. But they address it in their own way with their own sort of tongue in cheek they're not making fun of things so much as enjoying the silliness of human nature in ways, not to get too deep, but you know what I mean? Like they're appreciating things and their silliness all around without diminishing anything. And that's a fine line to walk. And I think they're doing a pretty good job. Yeah.
Well, we should rate this and move on. Cause I know we got a lot more to talk about. John.
It's a biff. I think it's a solid biff too. Fun character stuff. There was some joking about John again, which was delightful as usual. And then, they touched on a social issue.
Without screwing it up.
They did an all right job with it. They did well. And that's, I keep saying this, that's what we tune into the show for. It's like, it's funny and it's also heartfelt. And that's exactly what we got this week. So it's definitely a biff.
Guy?
Yeah, strong graph. I'll agree and just want to move on. I think it's great. I suspect that this may be one of the episodes we keep coming back to in the future and being like, hey, remember when they did this? Pretty great.
Sort
of like the IKEA episode. Not quite up there, but like
I'm not
close.
Sure it's quite as good as that. Those, like the IKEA one and the summer camp one, I think are like
standouts.
So good. I think those are like the two best episodes that I can think of the whole run of the show.
This feels like
this
top 10
up there, but I don't think it's quite as good as those two.
Yeah. Pretty great. Pretty great. So, strong biff.
Yeah, all around out the biff. This one was a lot of fun. Like I said, it was enjoyable enough for the first like 30 minutes, and then I feel like the last 10 really kicked it into overdrive. I'm interested to see where the plot is going. Obviously, we're on hiatus now for a while after this, but I feel like they've set up an interesting dynamic here. Leaving Bishop to sort of linger through the first half of the season and then get some redemption only to get killed off. I mean, those are like classic character arcs, but it really worked here for me. So I thought that was great. And it, sets up that we're now dealing with Gideon. We've got the evil Wave Rider. We've got, the team with a working time machine, but one that is perhaps not quite the standard to which they're used to. Just a lot of stuff that's sort of fun and in the mix. So I'm really enjoying that aspect of it, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with the back half of the season there when we come back in January.
Speaking of back halves, Gideon's really into Gary.
that was also funny, and
it was cute. It was funny. She's got just an innocence to her that's just kind of. Mm-hmm. It's just adorable.
Which goes
like
well
weird
with him because he's
also, fits great. Yeah.
Bayrod's like that's shame, and don't be ashamed by it. His right, pants, those pants do look good on him.
Yeah, I know. He's he's just such a fun, good catcher. Anyway, moving on.
All right, so let's jump the track. I don't even know where my transition word's gonna be there. Let's shift into high gear and jump the tracks for a recap of Hawkeye.
Jump into the ball pit.
Hawkeye. John's gonna take recap duties for this one.
All right. So we start out with Maya's origin story. She is in a school for hearing students because her father can't afford the school for deaf students. And it's hard for her, but she's a bright kid. She has an interest in dragons, which I find interesting. I wasn't sure if that was... going someplace else other than, like, he calls her his little dragon. She excels at martial arts, and at practice, her dad says her uncle will take her home after class, and we don't see the uncle, so it's definitely Mephisto.
Leave it for Uncle Mephisto. We'll take care of you.
Yeah. Let's just call him Bill. Oh, Billy. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Billy Fusk.
We will go to conspiracy corner later on that one. Later in life, she comes back to Fat Man Auto Repair.
Related to the Let Uncle It Go. Come on. It's all head herrings.
And finds Ronin killing everybody, including her father. And then we jump forward.
Can we stop to admire how Ronin does a completely unnecessary weirdo flip? He does a total ollie move. Like, he's stabbing
nobody's
a bunch of people,
any attention,
and then he just flips over a table. It's like, why?
Yeah.
It just seems like
when you're a ninja,
effort,
you know.
I guess so.
Got to do ninja.
Anyway.
Okay, so we jump forward to now, when the tracksuits are giving Clint and Kate rides on the coin machines, which is what I was hoping was going to happen once they got duct taped to those. Kate offers some relationship advice to one of them. Then Maya comes in. She sees Clint's hearing aid and tries signing to him. It doesn't go very well because he's only just learning sign language. Clint tells them that Kate isn't Ronin, that Black Widow killed Ronin. Maya says he's lying, and she does not like Kate's attitude. Clint gets loose. We got a fight. Maya kicks his hearing aid out and stomps on it. Clint manages to get his bow and arrows back, and we get some fancy shooting. He sets Kate free. He does a behind-the-back shot that had me yelling.
Yep.
And then he picks up the hearing aid, and they head outside and swipe a car. Clint can't hear Kate. They get the car going, and we get a long car chase shot that is really fun. They're out of regular arrows, so Kate shoots the buddy arrow. That slows down Cassie. Clint and Kate start finishing each other's sentences. Kate blows up one truck and then shoots a plunger arrow at Maya, which does nothing. A wire arrow slows Kazi down again. She drops two stoplights with acid arrows, I guess, that they so they can go through the red light.
Did that do anything?
I didn't know what
exactly
the point of that
why
was.
they were doing that.
Because
he
specifically tells her, shoot the things out, and it's like, that did nothing. Nothing happened.
I assume prevent collateral damage, maybe? Just prevent everybody else
I
from...
I suppose so.
I don't know.
Sure.
Something like that. Anyway, there was a reason for it. We just don't know what it is. they get on the Manhattan Bridge. Maya catches up to them, and Kate manages to get her bow back by reaching over and grabbing it out of her car. She uses a smoke arrow on them, and Maya crashes. They run into traffic and have to stop. Clint gives Kate a normal arrow. I thought we were out of all of those. And she shoots up. He shoots a Pymtech arrow at her arrow, making it huge. And it finally takes out Kazi's truck.
This was Kate, so great.
Yeah.
So
the
great.
The reveal was so great.
That was excellent.
Yeah.
Kate covers Clint with a USB arrow while he retrieves the plunger arrow. They jump over the side of the bridge and swing down using the plunger arrow to get on a train. They have a nice moment on the train, and then they go back to Kate's aunt's to walk Pizza Dog. Clint's kid calls, and Kate helps him talk to him since he can't hear. Nathaniel wants to know when he's going to be home. It's all very sad. The bros have to vacate their hideout. Kazi tries to talk to Maya and says he hopes Uncle doesn't find out about her vendetta. Clint and Kate get his hearing aid fixed and then get some breakfast. Kate's got some branding notes, and she's starting to catch on about Ronin. Clint says Maya's not the boss, and they don't want to mess with the boss. They go to her mom's penthouse and log onto her mom's computer, and they find out that Kazi is listed as an employee of Sloan Limited, which sounds familiar to Clint. Kate tries to search on Jack and then gets locked out of the computer system. Clint checks out a sound, and Jack is there, and he holds the Ronin's sword up to his neck and says, "Don't move."
I do want to add, I just Googled, because what I couldn't remember was whether or not the USB arrow, my wife thought it had maybe come up in the What If episode with the post-apocalyptic one, because they do use...
Oh, yeah.
They do use, like, a tech arrow of some kind on the Ultron thing with what's his name? The other... Azola.
He uses it in Avengers 1.
Does he?
He's in an
USB.
Air vent and he shoots it into the computer.
It's
and
not
takes
USB
over the...
though. It's like it's got prongs on it or something.
I do enjoy. I was just googling it.
It's
and
not
I
exactly
found...
really. Maybe that's USB G.
It's
who
very
knows?
Possible. There's another USB standard.
I did laugh because I googled it and found a Reddit thread from 3 years ago. The headline of which is just Hawkeye once shot an arrow into a USB port without pulling out and rotating it. # most powerful Avenger, which made me laugh. I thought that this episode, after the first two, which I thought were really good, this one is also great. There's a whole bunch of gags that made me laugh out loud. The Pym Tech arrow, the going through the ball pit and jumping out of the ball pit, great. The trampoline into the
jumping out
of
a ball pit and sticking two people with like arrows in their feet is hilarious.
Yeah. Also, yeah. I mean,
it's so good.
Is this the most arrow shooting we've seen Clint really do? I feel like.
Certainly since Avengers.
It's been a long time.
He does go on a bit of a murder spree. Although I'm not sure anybody's murdered. Like,
he shoots
people in the arm a lot.
He's, like, he's aiming to maim. He hits a guy in his shoulder. He hits a guy in a hand. He's not trying to kill anybody.
He's trying to take
him
out without.
He pins Echo to the Maya to the wall. He shoots Kazi, like nicks his cheek or whatever, his throat. I mean, I thought all those were. I mean, it's when you have a guy who is supposed to be the best archer in the world. Yeah, he should shoot some arrows. That's just how that should work. And we should remember he is really great at this for a reason. Like he's on the Avengers for a reason, not just because he's like occasionally okay in a fight.
Yeah,
that so that behind the back shot that John loves so much, I don't know if you noticed, Sean, it goes into the guy's hand, pinning his hand to the wall and making him drop a gun. It's not like in his face or anything. It's just center of mass. It's like that it's awesome. It's just such a fun goofy shot.
I mean, we you know, if for people who are not longtime listeners of the show, we used to rail on Arrow about the fact that he's supposedly the best archer in the world, and he basically just used the bow as a gun. You know, he would just shoot people straight on and didn't get too many. We didn't get
or
enough balls. Trick shots and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He did shoot a guy with a boxing glove arrow
like,
once.
Toward the end, like I think when they switched showrunners, right, we got a little bit more of that.
Yeah. Yeah, we get a little. Yeah. But this is... I feel like they must have watched Arrow. Like some of this using the bows as
fighting. Yeah, I always wonder why people do that. It seems like they're not really designed for that. Yeah.
No.
Well, his bow is made of something, you know, like cuz he used it to fight Black Panther in Civil War.
Oh yeah, it transformed, which I didn't like. But they haven't done that. We have a weird thing. Like, we like real basic bows, but we also want to see them get used as baseball bats.
Both of their bows look like regular bows.
Kate's here is just a straight up recurve bow or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When he draws back, the whole thing bends a lot. Like, it feels more animated than what Arrow was doing. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, I don't know how much of it is CGI versus
I'm sure most of it's CGI, but there's a real sense of tension. Like when he pulls back, you're like, "Well, it seems hard," and it hits a guy, and they go flying, and it looks pretty cool. We'll probably need to rewind after this, but I love that scene where they're in the subway. Mm-hmm. And that conversation that they have, like they're mimicking sort of each other's, like
they say the same thing out of order,
right?
They're saying the same thing out of order, like the same things are on their mind, but he's like swapped it a bit. I love that he's like, you know what, you were right. You're right to call yourself one of the world's greatest archers.
And this and the smile on her face is. So great.
Like, again,
I took a screenshot of that because I was just like, you know, he's sitting there and he's just exhausted and he doesn't really know that they're having a moment. And she's just like, oh, my God, Dad loves me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like star-wise.
You know. Also, I mean, the boundless energy of a 22-year-old versus when you're 50 and you beat up a whole bunch of guys, you need to sit down for a while.
Yeah.
I'm pretty...
That's what happens with me, man.
I'm pretty sure he's 50-ish, you know? I know the actor is, but...
Yeah, the actor is. I don't know how old Hawkeye is. He seems like he's maybe supposed to be 45 or something, but...
Whatever it is.
Well into his 40s.
Yeah, he's tired. Like, in the diner, he's like, look, for the past 20 years, my job has been to do this, or to be a ghost or whatever it is. You don't get the sense that you don't go to boot camp and then get turned into Hawkeye. Like,
right,
you've done a lot of work before you get programmed, you know?
He was a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, right? Essentially, as we talked about last week. So, he's a spy. He's a, you know, covert operative or whatever. We don't actually know that much about his background.
No.
Which I kind of like.
I don't need a whole origin story.
But you get like an older Bond vibe or like a Kirk in Wrath of Khan sort of vibe of like, okay, I've done this a lot. I'm kind of tired. I'm still pretty good when I put my mind to it, but Kirk, I can get caught with my pants down. It's the whole, you know... He's very confident when he's sitting on that unicorn rocking back and forth because he's like, well...
situation I have been in.
No, yeah. No,
I'm reasonably in command of the situation. These guys are kind of goofs, you know. Yeah. When he starts matching up with Echo, I think he gets like, oh, okay, this is legit. But I don't think he starts fearing for his life because he doesn't kill any of these idiots. He's kind of like, okay, let's just get out of here and keep moving. He did want Kate to drive, which I thought was...
He wanted to shoot the arrows. That's what I assumed,
On the other hand, he must know how to drive a lot better than she's going to know how to drive.
She doesn't know how to drive at all.
Can only do one of those things, and I think he determines, he feels like he'll be more useful shooting people because he doesn't really know how good she is.
Right. He knows what the arrows do.
Definitely needs to label those.
It's like sure. I don't think sharing arrows is a thing that comes up with him very often.
In the first Avengers movie, he's got like that automatic quiver thing where it like spins around.
Which was really cool.
It was cool. It made sense too, right? Like it like popped the heads on, right? And like he could pick a different thing, which was very cool. Here. He's just got like a bunch in a court. Like it is funny to me, first of all, that like I don't think they ever really address this. Like he's carrying this stuff around, right? Like he goes to like a vacation with his kids.
He's going unless he had it stashed someplace,
which is
like,
possible.
Maybe he's got them stashed around, you know,
New York
cities.
Or something. But like, he put his hands on those pretty quickly, so he knows when there's trouble afoot. So maybe it's a backup quiver or something.
Should not think about this too hard because
I want to dissect it.
Why is he sitting on a curbside trying to get his hearing aid replaced?
Why doesn't he just go like, to Stark Industries or
pick up a phone? Anybody? Yeah. Like I'm sure you could text Pepper. I don't know.
I will say having parents who are both hearing impaired, like getting one of those like set up correctly is actually. It is take some time. I can understand why he was like, we just need to get this one fixed. Like, I don't want to deal with like trying to get anyone.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, like,
I don't,
this is the
I
problem with
to...
anything with Avengers is like, why do you never call your friends?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, because he's having his own adventure. It's called Hawkeye.
Yeah.
It's not called Hawkeye. I mean,
and the Avengers. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not Hawkier. Yeah. I love how much he's just giving him crap. Like,
well, that is such a big part of the Kate and Clint relationship in the comics, too, is like, they don't pull punches with each other, which I think is always one of the fun parts of that run, especially is like they kind of yell at each other a lot. They get annoyed at each other a lot, but they also are very much on the same page and like the banter. Right. You know, I think that was one thing we all felt like we'd missed a bit from Falcon and Winter Soldier was those two characters should have fun interacting and, you know, banter back and forth, etc., because that's what they're great at in the movies. And I think that's what's great about Kate and Clint here is like,
and there
they
was
do
some of that,
it.
But not enough. Expecting for that show.
Yeah.
Right.
And those
she is incredibly charismatic.
Yes.
She's fantastic.
Remarkably so, just as an up-and-coming actor, she's got it. She's nailed it really, really well. More so than I think Renner in these, who He's got to be the straight man, which is kind of, you know, he's fun at times.
Things. Like, there's that. Yeah. He's got to be the straight man to her, you know.
Over enthusiastic, yeah, you know, right. Overconfident, yeah.
But also, he's at a point in his life, like, he's, I mean, he's getting pulled into this because his past is coming back to haunt him. He murdered all these people, and he feels terrible about it now. And that's why, you know, like, she's like, you're a role model. And he's like, I am not a role model.
Right, right.
And it's very sad, right. You know? I mean, his best friend is dead. There's that. And then he feels like he was just horrible for
many
years.
He feels like he's letting down his family right now, too. So he's got
and
that.
He's letting down his family. Yeah. Yeah. Like, he's not in a position to be very funny, particularly. I mean, he's...
No. I like it. I just... he feels flatter than... than she does,
and I think it's great. There is an argument about this too, right? I mean, like, they're at different ends of the spectrum when it comes to their career, right? Like, he tells her in the diner, like, you go down this path, you're going to sacrifice some stuff that you may never get back, right? And that he is the other side of that from her, where she's like, oh, I could be a superhero, this is amazing, you know. So
are you saying that she's Savick to his Spock?
Was I saying that.
or Riker and what's her name from the Borg episode?
Shelby.
Yeah.
they're almost at the same. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Anyway,
I'm just trying to crack jokes.
I did want to say that one scene, the scene where his hearing aid is getting repaired and he's on the phone with his son.
Yeah.
And she has to interpret because he can't hear him. I thought it was fabulous. Just what a great scene. And what a great way to continually up the bond between these two characters, even though she gives him crap and, like, they banter back and forth and all that. Deep, you know, when you sort of peel that away and she realizes, like, oh, this is really important. Like, she is just, all of that cockiness sort of goes away and she just helps him, which is great.
Yeah. That scene gave me more of an emotional affectation than I expected it to. Like, I was like, "Oh, that's." I like when he just says thank you at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she hasn't said a word. She's not holding it over his head. She's just trying her best to sort of make things.
Well, and she doesn't quip, right? I mean,
she doesn't quip once.
She usually has a quip for everything, and she knows that's not the right time.
She doesn't quip once.
And the film,
and I love the production of, like,
we don't hear the child's
voice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't hear it, so it affects us, too.
And very much an echo, if you will, of that opening scene with Maya in the classroom where we only get her lip reading and only occasionally sort of picking up stuff.
Yeah.
Is that a good segue to... Oh, sorry.
Well, I was going to say that they do nice work in picking and choosing what they're going to let you hear, you know, the audience hear, because they're in the diner and Kate starts talking about, like, oh my God, when that one thing happened, and I wanted to know what she thought was the coolest thing, and you can't hear it.
Me
like,
too.
Yeah, right.
Cut to him, and it's like, he's not listening to her at all. One more thing about that conversation is that it's shot, a lot of it is shot directly, you know, them looking basically directly at the camera.
Right.
Probably really tough to act, I would imagine, because you're emoting to the camera rather than interacting with another person. So I think they both did a great job.
Yeah, she's remarkably good, really is. Because I don't know if she, like, they must have written lines for her to say that they then muted out. But she was telling them, like, the look on her face as she was explaining, like a Peanuts parent character was, like, pretty great. Like, you understood that she was excited and, like, a little concerned. You could see the narrative that was going on. I'm like, this is great. It's just, it's a remarkably thoughtful and interesting way to actually present this stuff. I do want to talk about Maya a little bit in that, we get a backstory. The only character besides
Kate.
Kate, thank you. That we've had a flashback for. I really sort of admire that whole conversation where she's like, she cuts him loose because she thinks he's deaf, which is weird. Don't do that. he's still an Avenger. That's a weird thing. And then when she realizes that he doesn't know sign language, he's like, "Ah, screw you! You're not one of us."
Right.
And then
right,
she lectures him. Then she lectures him about like
relying on technology.
You're relying on that technology too much. And he's like, "I got two sticks and a string," which is funny.
Yeah,
that's an actual funny thing. You know, like that, I'm pretty low tech. So if you want me to go lower tech, I don't know where to go with that.
I enjoy that his failure to sign where he's like, I want another cookie or something, right? Like,
what did you think about that? So do you think his kid is deaf? Is Nathaniel deaf?
No, I don't think so. No, they're learning it for him because he's slowly going deaf, I think.
Right, but he is not picking it up as fast, which is fairly common, I think, for somebody of his age learning it. And also you get the idea that maybe he's just hasn't really kind of come to terms with it.
Yeah.
Like he's still sort of.
I think so. Yeah. I think that's probably true.
Which is what I think her point is, right? It's like just embrace this, you know?
Well, it's also a big thing within the non-hearing community is that it's a decision that you have to, like a lot of people have to make, whether you're going to use hearing aids or whether you're going to just be a, you know, functioning deaf person. And it becomes like, it's like a, there are sides.
Yeah.
That played very well. I think
interesting.
I thought it played well. I was not aware of that as having been a perspective, but it makes sense. I get it. Embrace what your capabilities are.
I was also interested a thing. So I knew that the actress Alacqua Cox, I believe, is deaf. I did not know that she also had a prosthetic.
She's an amputee.
Yeah. Is that true? Is that just in the show?
I assumed so. I didn't think they would do that unless it were... because I don't think the character in the comics does.
No, I didn't think so either. I just...
My understanding is that she's an amputee. Yes.
Yep, she is. That's correct.
Okay.
I didn't think they would do it if she wasn't, because that seemed unnecessary. Like, I figured they would get a lot of criticism for that. So I think they just rolled it in because she is... and I thought that was great. Again, not something they ever explained, which is fine. It's not important.
Yeah.
They showed her like the flashbacks where she's a kid.
I love that. I love that young black kid who's pretty great at karate. He's he's like a yellow belt. And you see him take down somebody, not through sheer force, but like, you know, they show his foot stepping over the other guy's foot, like, you know, making it. He's not just stronger than punch them in the face. He just knew a better move. And then when he gets presented with Maya, who is
like a head shorter than him,
two thirds his size. Yeah. Like she's like way smaller, and she's an amputee. And he's like, okay. Like he kind of gets this like, I don't feel good about this. And then he just gets demolished immediately. I love it. I love it. I like that guy. Like he seems like a good-natured guy. Like I don't feel comfortable about this. This is weird. And then he just gets destroyed. But he's not like overly cocky, and he doesn't refuse to fight her.
Yeah,
he's just like I don't know about this. And then you know she wins. So awesome.
Right, which is a tip of the hat to her comic version, whose power is like being able to basically mimic stuff.
Yeah, she's a bit of a taskmaster. Right. Yeah, it's just for
And I love little detail.
She's called Echo. She's a bit of a taskmaster style, like repeat the moves kind of thing.
I'm just gonna need John to put that in the show notes.
wrong one.
Yeah,
wrong
sorry.
Well, I will
bad.
Definitely link to Taskmaster, the character.
I also thought it was funny in the scene where at the very beginning she's writing the stuff in the notebook as a kid. It says, I want to learn capoeira, which A, is not an easy thing to spell, but also is just awesome because it's a, you know, it's a martial art, right? So like she clearly is super into that. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was kind of like a
she
a
draws
cool
that
moment.
Dragon in there too.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. Interesting
I love
character.
That teacher. That teacher was great. Yeah. Like she comes over, she's like, look, you got to pay attention. And then she sees that all the work is figured out. It's like,
she's done already.
Right.
You know, well, so, like you're awesome. I'm sorry about that.
It's an interesting choice, Guy. You alluded to, like, so we saw her backstory here, right? Like, we know that she has a spinoff coming. I also note this is her first, basically her first acting role ever. that actress. And so she's got this, and then like an immediately a spinoff, which is kind of interesting, right? So knowing that she has a spinoff coming up means we are invited to sympathize with her and to view her as a hero, even if at the moment she is on the opposite side.
Right. Yeah. Well, in the comic book, she is sort of tricked by Kingpin.
Right.
Into
trying to kill Daredevil. Yeah. Right. And I think that's, you know, we don't really know where this is going. We can tell right now that she's got an axe to grind with Ronin for obvious reasons. So the revelation that Clint Barton was Ronin is sure to throw a wrench in the cogs here at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. How great is her dad? That actor is awesome.
Yeah, I've seen him before. I was trying to place him.
Yeah. He's been on a couple of things. I've definitely seen him before, too. That's the face of a man you don't want to make mad. But he is so full of... Do you know what I mean? Like, he looks like he could be stern.
Yeah,
I mean,
if you saw the other aspects of his life, right? Yeah. I
mean, right.
They show you him being a dad.
But if you had
seen him being a bad guy, which he apparently was,
I 100%
you'd
believe
a different impression.
I 100% believe that that guy would be an upper echelon bad guy in the tracksuit mafia, mostly because they're dumb, and he does not seem dumb. He seems thoughtful, and you know, you're going places.
Well,
on the other hand, he's got such lovely eyes and such heartwarming stuff to say to his daughter. You know, even when he gets stabbed by Clint, it's, you know, and by the way, the bloody hand on the face is part of the Echo character.
Part of her costume.
It's a callback to her
interesting
costume. I thought he sold it. I really did.
He was
amazing. Yeah. It made sense. Yeah. And you're like, oh, Clint, you really screwed up.
I mean, why
are you killing all these people?
Right.
You know?
I mean, it doesn't make Clint look particularly great. Right.
No,
so like,
no.
And we've known this, but like there is a moment where he is going to have to come to, you know, some sort of confession, or, you know, sort of come clean about this. Right. Like, both to Kate and probably eventually to Maya as well, I would assume.
Yeah. It could even be in the same scene.
Yeah. And what is fascinating to me about this is that we discussed last week all the things that were sort of the plates that were spinning. And this seems like to throw another one into, like, a whole new one into the mix, which is also wild because it feels like we're halfway through this show. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff.
Are we halfway through this show?
Yeah. Yeah.
Six episodes. Sure. So this is episode three. So how would you describe this episode in the sequence?
It feels like it's still heightening at this point.
No,
right?
Is it the penultimate?
It's
God. He went all that way for that.
Is it perhaps it's the anti-penultimate?
As we discussed this last week, it's the pre-anti-penultimate.
Oh, God. Yeah, I went down. You're right, John. I went down a long walk for that.
That was a really bad joke. I was trying to have a conversation in good faith.
That was a forced march to that joke.
I was trying to have a conversation in good faith. Man, I can't afford the words you spit out. So, you know. But the third of six.
Right.
So
we still have. So we haven't figured out the deal with Jack, which we will see. We haven't figured out who's running the tracksuit mafia, which we can talk about in a second. We now have.
Yeah.
Maya in the mix. We still have Yelena floating around out there somewhere, who we haven't seen at all, but who we know is showing up at some point, maybe at this point in like a post-credit scene, maybe.
She's
like,
the uncle.
She's the uncle. Do we want, or should we talk about the uncle in the room?
Are we going to conspiracy corner already? I mean, I got a couple other small things.
Throw your odds and ends. Yeah. There's plenty to talk about.
There's a continuity error in the car chase.
I thought so too.
Yeah, she's holding the bow lefty in the shots that are facing her, and then righty in the shots that are facing the other way. And I figured what probably happened is they shot one angle first, and then they were like, "Oh wait, she's using Clint's bow, and Clint's is he's a lefty."
Oh yeah, maybe she's good enough to shoot with both. I don't know.
And hers is I mean, I think you're supposed to assume that they both are because he was righty in Thor.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, so there was that. I love that the putty and smoke are both purple.
Purple? That's yep. Perfect. Yeah.
They don't need to be. I mean, that's not really been much of his color up until now.
The putty arrow is a little comical because the CGI in it is pretty bad, but it's made up
for... I think it's great.
It's very funny. And made up for also by the whatchamacallit, the wire arrow too, where it grabs all the Christmas trees. That made me laugh a lot.
I loved that.
The first time I watched the wire arrow, I thought it was a spider web.
Right? Oh yeah.
Because I kind of like, I was watching it, I'm like, man, just say something about Pete. Like, because she asks like, what's that arrow? And it turns out he says, sorry, Santa, because he's about to run over like a floating Santa thing.
Which popped, but the shot on that too, by the way, the cinematography where it pops back up again afterwards. Excellent shot.
I love it. It's great. But I really did think it was like, my pal Pete gave me that. Like some reference to, you know, Spider-Man. Yeah. But it wasn't. Wires. It was just wires and but the pin particle thing.
Well, the other thing about that is that the Manhattan Bridge is a double decker. So I was like, I hope that didn't go through to the bottom.
You do not want to think.
Probably incidentally killed a bunch of people.
You don't want to think about that shot too hard, because I don't know if you noticed. The arrow comes down and then it's just not in any subsequent shots. It's gone.
I think it's there, but it's huge.
It's like, maybe
I went back and I looked, and at first when I only went back a little bit and I was like, no, that's just like the bridge back there. But then when I went back further, it's giant and it is a little bit like purplish red tinged.
Anyway, it did remind me a bit there,
so maybe I didn't notice it because it was just so big that
it's pretty sloppy.
It did remind me a bit of there's that giant statue sculpture in San Francisco. That's a arrow. Have you guys seen? It's like a classic one. That's like a giant statue of an arrow, a bow and arrow, in San Francisco. And that's what it made me think of that. Because it's near the Embarcadero, I want to say. A Cupid's span. It's installed along the Embarcadero in San Francisco.
Yeah, I think I've seen that.
I've definitely walked by it at some point. It's been there for 20 years or so almost. Anyways, it made me laugh because I thought of that. Also, I wanted to mention, since you mentioned the purple, John, the scene where she sketches the classic outfit, of course.
Yeah.
Which we already, I like, because it's like a multiple joke, because we already saw the thing last time where she tried to draw the tracksuit mafia guys and is very bad. But also the classic suit, which of course is terrible.
Yes, it's probably one of the worst superhero suits ever.
I drew the H for Hawkeye.
Okay, so
conspiracy corner.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
You open? Are we? Are you okay? Good. Let's get a little quality. Conspiracy.
Speaking of Foley, the guy that we're about to talk about has some Foley when he enters the scene.
Footsteps? Is it?
Yeah, footsteps. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. On the one hand, it does seem. I went back and rewatched it because I didn't really like. It didn't really compute for me the first time through when Tim mentioned the uncle. I totally somehow blacked out that scene, but then everyone was talking about it, so I went back and did catch at least that part. And
they bring it back later when they're like, uncle's going to be mad.
Yeah, right. Yes. But he shows up, right? You have the shot where he touches her face and like you hear a laugh. And, you know, it does... On the one hand, yes, it sounds like Vincent D'Onofrio. It kind of has
a little.
It has kind of a little look of him. Like, I don't know. But at the same time,
he wore those fancy suits. Like, I mean, he was a snappy dresser. And the hand looked large enough to be his.
It's like, is this Mephisto all over again? Or
yes, exactly.
Or I mean, on the flip side, like, I mean, they threw Kang into the end of Loki without any prior sort of, you know, tip of the hat or anything really. So it feels certainly possible.
I think it's possible. I think it's probably either Jack or her father.
Those were my guesses as well.
Yeah. I think that would be more likely. But...
Jack seems too obvious. There's something going on there where I feel like his whole swordsman thing is just too obvious.
Jack is a weenie.
He's not rolling in money either. Right. That's the other thing.
Jack is
marrying her mom for her money seemingly.
Right. So, but they are the two characters that we haven't really dealt with. Also, the timing on that. So I think they said the flashback was 2007. So yeah. Even if it was a couple years after that, it could conceivably be her father before he dies in the Battle of New York.
Well, except,
assuming he's actually dead.
Which yeah, he may or not well, be. Yeah, I think it seems like he may not be.
And we do get the idea from Kate talking last week about him, I think, that like he was like, oh, he always was helping people, like was kind of the what she said
she
about
that
him.
This week
actually. Was it this week? Okay, sorry.
I'm not sure though.
But like there is a something about like our dad was always helping people, which may sort of link into why he was looking out for this girl or what
yeah.
have you.
Yeah, could be.
Right. On the other hand, I don't see a massive mob boss getting in an argument with his wife about like where the money's going to come from. Like, hey,
yeah,
trust
fair.
Me, baby, I'm going to come up with some money. It's like,
yeah, did you the know, kingpin ever getting.
Right, you know.
Yeah.
Also of note, he extended his left hand to pinch her cheek. he was not wearing a watch.
Well,
which was the MacGuffin that we got in episode one that we have not somehow come back to. Maybe nobody cares.
Yeah, and we don't know. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities here, right? Like even if it was Kingpin, or you know, possible the MCU would do an entirely different take on Kingpin, which may or may not even be Vincent D'Onofrio, right? Like they're like, you know, there's a lot
of
possibilities floating around.
Hard pressed to beat.
He's great. I have no downside to that. But they have so far been very reticent to engage with any of the Netflix shows.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, they're opening up the multiverse, which does give them some leeway. There are all the Matt Murdock and Spider-Man reports, like. And I've like read stuff that suggests that Kevin Feige really liked both D'Onofrio and Charlie Cox's performances. So yeah, who knows, right?
Yeah.
Anything can happen. But I'm not really sure. If so, they have kept an amazingly good, like they've kept it under wraps amazingly well.
What do you think about this as a conspiracy? We never learn who Uncle is.
Just unsatisfying, it feels like.
Yeah,
but
I that seems unlikely to me, but
unless it doesn't end up being ultimately important in this story and it ends up being something that refers to
thing.
Like comes up later. But unless
I do like how they did, you know, they put that character in Shang-Chi with the mask on, and you know, you sort of think it's got to be, there's going to be some reveal there.
Oh yeah,
and then, no that character is there just to die suddenly at the end.
Yeah, I definitely had that moment while watching that, thinking, oh, I guess that guy wasn't important.
He's like a super good fighter, and it's like, oh, it's got to be somebody. Nope, it's nobody.
It's just a guy in a mask.
Yeah, well, it was a guy that trained him right when he was younger. Who
yeah
cares? Doesn't
yeah,
matter,
but
he just gets chomped,
like, you
gets chomped by
beginning.
A CGI monster. And you're like, okay.
All right. I think part of me wonders if you do. So, for example, if you do decide to roll Kingpin into this and it's Vincent D'Onofrio, I kind of feel like it's tough to imagine imagine them finishing this series without announcing that they're planning on doing something with Daredevil, because he's a huge character. And if you're going to, you got to, I mean, Marvel's not one to leave money lying on the table, is my feeling. Like, Daredevil is a marquee character for them, right? He is he's a name character who people know and people will recognize.
Here's the thing. Is Kingpin a Spidey villain, which is what he started as, same with Punisher, or is he a Daredevil villain who I think Frank Miller basically adopted him into the Daredevil mythos as
well. There's a lot of crossover with Daredevil and Spider-Man too, right? I
mean, of course, yeah. They're both like more quote-unquote street level sort of people,
they interact a lot in the comics, I feel like.
Who owns what is, I guess, what I'm getting at. Like, does Sony own
he clearly
Fisk?
Not it
no,
was
they
on the Netflix
they,
right
yeah.
I mean, that was
right.
all Marvel stuff so they own
so they must not have Kingpin because otherwise
okay.
They wouldn't have been able to do the crappy movie with
Ben Affleck, right? Because they did him there too. So that must be a straight up Marvel thing at that point. So I assume Kingpin was still separate, which is why. Although he shows up in Into the Spider-Verse too, so
right.
I guess there may be some crossover there. So
Boy,
I'd hate to be these lawyers.
I know. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Well, do you know what? I'm pretty sure that the creatives get in a room and talk about what they want, and then they go to legal and be like, just figure this out. Just pay whatever we need to get paid to make this kind of thing work. But it makes it really hard for us to sort of guess if, you know, Who is this? Who knows?
Yeah, why don't they make it easier on us? That's what we want to
know. Exactly. It could be Kurt Connors, for all we know. Kurt Connors being the lizard.
But it does open up the possibility, too, right? If you introduce someone as big as D'Onofrio, maybe then he is the villain in the Echo series, because...
That would make sense. I mean, I think that would fit.
It would
set him
apart from the Daredevil performance, right? Like, you get to sort of do a different story with him.
Right.
So also the conspiracy corner thing. It feels to me from this episode that Hawkeye, Ronan, Clint went up against the Tracksuit Mafia. It went pretty high. And then he stopped because they say he almost wiped out everybody, but he didn't quite.
Yeah.
And Wilson Fisk, Kingpin, is the kind of guy that you maybe stop at because it's like, well, half the world is gone and somehow Wilson Fisk is holding New York together and he's doing both good and bad. And it's like, it gets real
murky.
You're going to take all of me out. I don't know what's going to happen. Like, I could see a detente being reached between Hawkeye and Wilson Fisk, because Wilson Fisk does that kind of stuff all the time, right? Like, it's just not in your best interest to take me out.
I don't picture that happening when he was Ronin, but, you know.
Maybe he just didn't manage to get to the top.
Yeah, I think it would be more that.
I thought, by the way, it was interesting. I really liked that he says that Black Widow killed Ronan, even though I kind of saw it coming. Yeah.
That was entirely true. I loved every word of that.
Every word of that was true.
Exactly, but just...
It was going back to a very Ollie Queen sort of like reading of things. Yeah, it's like,
she killed him with hope.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's how Darth Vader died, right? It was like... It's the same kind of like... Yeah. Well,
I think that was lightning.
Except he also died.
Yeah.
Mainly lightning.
Every word he says is true. Ronan died when Black Widow showed up. Yeah. Sure. And Clint was there.
It's true.
All of these things are true.
From a certain point of view.
Exactly. Yeah.
Obi-Wan Barton.
Obi-Wan would love this.
He's a big fan of the Marvel series so far, is what I hear. Yeah. All right. Anything else that we want to talk about before we move on to a rating?
No.
Let's just do it then. Let's do it up, Guy.
You kidding me?
I have to ask. It's in the contract.
This is how we do the show, man. Come on.
It is two arrows restraining a villain, Biff. That is one of the moves I've always loved. I mean, you just whip out two arrows and somehow you pin them to the wall.
Yeah, don't mess with that one. It's going through the
basic
throat.
It works. It's great. I really, really like this. Part of me worries that Clint is not going to make it on for Christmas, but that's more conspiracy corner stuff. I think a lot of these shows, a lot of this phase of Marvel has been passing the baton, or a baton that somehow morphs into an 80,000-pound arrow. I loved this episode. I thought it was really, really well done. It introduced a bunch of new characters and both thoughtful, funny, and action-packed. It was great. I can't wait to see more. This episode was better than the previous two, and I liked the previous two.
John?
Yeah, it's... I don't know. An H on the forehead, Biff. just as Guy said, I think this, I really enjoyed the first two, and then I watched this one and I was blown away. I mean, I think I just thought this was absolutely fantastic because the character moments are so good. And that whole car chase, the fight in the KB toys, and the whole car chase
KB toys, that made me laugh pretty hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny and it's heartfelt and it's got great action and it's everything that I love. So I think this is an absolutely fantastic episode of television.
Yeah, I'm going to I'll round that out. It's a ball pit Biff. just sneaks up on you, grabs you, stabs an arrow in your foot. I really enjoyed this episode. I love that whole action-packed scene at the beginning. I saw people complaining the back half of the episode gets kind of slow. It's like, God, I need it to be slow after the action in the first half. Yeah, you gotta have those peaks and valleys.
That's not a problem for me.
Yeah, you can't sustain these things. Like, you gotta go down so you can come back up, you know. You gotta get to your resting heart rate. So I'm enjoying the mystery unfolding. I'm enjoying the addition of new characters. It was fun. Hailee Steinfeld is fantastic. She's just really, really good. We do not deserve somebody that good playing Kate Bishop. it's keeping me guessing. I mean, I think my only criticism of this show at this point is, like, I really do want to binge this entire show right now. Like, I'm normally very good with, like, the week-to-week rollout, but I could just mainline this, like, directly into the veins.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I would, but I'm kind of enjoying the fact that I get to draw it out longer.
Yeah, no, that's you know what? It'll take us through Christmas, which is great.
Yep.
Dan, what you... I don't know if we told you this.
Is this John an intervention?
Asked, like, no. Yeah. John asked us, let me know when you've seen this episode. And when I said I'd seen it, he immediately texted me privately with a GIF of Clint shooting somebody behind the back. Like, it already had it. He was sitting on that, just eager to share that with us.
Oh, yeah. I mean, have you met John Maltz? I have.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I just loved it. Like, you couldn't wait another hour or whatever it was for Dan to finish. You're like, oh, God, I got to share this.
I made that right after I finished the episode.
Naturally.
It was
like, yeah.
It was so great.
Yeah. I assume it was that and seven more t-shirts.
I don't know. Actually, yeah. I don't think I've made any in the intervening week, but five is kind of a lot for this show.
That is a lot.
Five is
a lot. There's more to come. That is what we're talking about this week. We'll be back next week, of course, with a discussion of episode 4 of Hawkeye. Are we out of time today? We got an out. Or should we acknowledge?
Let's save sweep for next week. All right,
we'll save some sweep for next week when we only got one
episode. Because we've only got one episode.
It's building up,
probably,
which we'll talk about for 2 hours.
Yeah. Hey, John, what's next week's episode?
I see what he's doing again.
It's the anti-penultimate episode, guy.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Just so, so everybody
is
knows.
It? No, it's episode Isn't 5 it? Of 6. It's the penultimate
it's
episode.
It's 4.
No,
and it's the anti-penultimate episode.
It's the anti-penultimate episode, yeah.
Okay, whatever.
This is
Get
why we cover this.
The joke
this
right.
This is why we discuss these things.
Well, I would, of course, as always, like to thank my co-hosts for being here and talking about some great superhero TV. John Maltz, always a pleasure.
I really don't want to die in a factory.
It's true. Guy English, thank you for being here.
I'd crack a joke, but these were two actually pretty great episodes of TV. Pretty fun.
And that means you can't crack a joke? Okay.
Well,
now I feel bad.
Well, don't feel too bad. You're going to die in a very nice factory.
feel a little bad.
Yeah. Or a KB Toys. One of those.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
See, I have seen your future, John. I hate to tell you.
Die in a sort of haunted KB Toys.
Thank you, everybody out there, for listening and watching along with us. As always, you can send us your fan mail, your letters, your fan art, your... commentary, questions,
you can
thoughts.
Go to cottonbureau.com and search on GIFcast.
I was getting there.
Yeah.
Not fast
Send
enough,
us your
apparently.
Receipts. Just Send us your out. Money.
keep circulating the tapes. BiffCast on Twitter or biff@theincomparable.com. We did get a very nice letter from reader Larry talking about how much he was enjoying Hawkeye. So thanks for writing in, Larry. Other than that, we'll see you next week.
Man, I have missed watching shows where arrows get stuck into people. That's so fun!